There's the case of the skydiving instructor. A woman celebrating her son's 30th birthday jumps out of a plane harnessed to the skydiving instructor, Jim. Jim's 45 and a veteran of the original Persian Gulf War. The woman's a state employment counselor turned headhunter, age enlisted. For a brief moment, she enjoys the rush. She's not falling so much as gliding. "I can't believe I'm doing this," she thinks. She counts 10 Mississippis, checks her gauge, pulls the cord. She expects a kick, a pop, whiplash, but there's nothing. She pulls again, Jim pulls, nothing. The two fall at terminal velocity, 54 meters per second, 125 miles an hour. It's too loud to talk, but somehow Jim communicates with the woman. He tells her there's no need to panic, that things like this, chutes not opening, happen, which is why there's a failsafe, his parachute. It opens automatically at a certain height and speed. The best thing she can do, all she can do, is wait. And so she waits, and very soon, though not soon enough, she hears a boom. Red nylon ripples overhead, and immediately the world below disappears. Objects vibrate so violently they lose shape. A loud whooshing fills the air. What has happened is the emergency parachute has malfunctioned, sending the two into a barber's pole, a spiral toward the ground. Except the woman does not see the ground. She has lost orientation. She only knows she is falling. "I know I'm going to die," she thinks. The people down below know something's wrong. Their accounts are all the same. There's anticipation, followed by consternation. What are they trying to do? Followed by horror. They don't believe this is happening, can't conceive something like this can occur, and yet it's so simple, a mass heading relentlessly toward the ground, physics. At the moment of impact, an impact people typically don't feel, the vast majority vasovagaling before hitting the ground, something overtakes the woman, a force that thrusts her legs above her head and pushes her neck forward, such that the woman lands face up. The paramedics find her quiet and tangled in the parachutes. She has a pulse, follows commands, and moves all four limbs. This is all documented. The final diagnosis is an ipsilateral fracture of the right humerus and fibula, as well as some neck damage. The surgeon decides to fuse C3 through 7 so that now if she wants to look right or left, she has to turn her torso. That and a limp, the woman's told that this will be temporary, are her only deficits. Jim's a different story. His spleen bursts upon impact. He breaks vertebrae T7 through 11 and severs his spine. The left kidney is gone. Both adrenals infarct. His bowels perforate. You might think these are the findings at autopsy, but no. It's all in the op report because Jim makes it to surgery. He hits the ground, and within 45 minutes, he's on the table for XLAP, which the surgeon quickly transforms into a total colectomy, followed by splenectomy, nephrectomy, laminectomy, etc. He develops recurrent abscesses. The surgeons take him to the OR for washouts every day, his bowel spillage hiding in the peritoneal folds like glass and carpet. Once the liver begins to fail, Jim's doctors fill out the necessary paperwork, and very quickly, he moves to the top of the transplant list. Hospital administrators and department chiefs debate whether someone with so small a chance should be on such a list, but in the end, it doesn't matter. Jim dies. A postmortem performed 2 hours afterwards reveals liquefactive brain necrosis in the pattern of a lawn with one working sprinkler. The pathologist on the case, overworked perhaps, the signs of burnout are there, questions outright in the chart why the physician of record would request an autopsy in the first place, even though it's clear from the detail of his findings, owl eye nuclei, porcelain gallbladder, honeycombed lung, he enjoys the sight of fresh versus refrigerated death. He lists heart failure as one of the causes, which brings to mind the fate of another Jim, James Douglas Morrison, lead singer of The Doors. Morrison's heart stopped in Paris and the French performed an autopsy, as they so often did. Can you tell me what's written on his death certificate? There's a nurse's note dated 2 days before our Jim's death. Often nurses will paste printouts, computer-generated orders, flowcharts for documentation. Other notes, for instance a layman's note, are not commonly used. What the nurse has done here is pasted a thank you note into the chart. It appears nice, professional, something one might send following a round of interviews. The signature appears illegible, but the words are clear. "You saved my life. I will never forget." There are the phenomena of all such occurrences. If this person had come to this event at this time, maybe this never would have happened, etc. And maybe in the case of the skydiving instructor, these are legitimate afterthoughts. Since the woman celebrating her son's 30th birthday really wasn't scheduled to jump that morning, and Jim really was supposed to be at his father's farm that day, you can go on. But that's not what's important here. What's important is this. At the very moment of impact, Jim pulled the woman above him, curled her from that heap of harnesses and half-deployed parachutes and jumpsuits so that when their bodies hit, the woman fell on top of him. What matters is Jim took the fall, Jim the skydiving instructor. By By some ethic, this man sacrificed his body for that of a client, a stranger. I'm still trying to figure out why. Thank you.